Hey, John, it's Mark.
Hey there.
Well, we got the show on the air.
Whew, yeah, we did.
You think any CDOs or CIOs listened?
Listen or just hear?
Good point. But I'd be happy with either.
I listened while eating my Cheerios.
Sounds like a great way to start the day. And between you and me, that's an audience of two.
We had more than that. But you know, CDOs and CIOs and all those other O's and my Cheerios would listen if they knew we were giving them the golden ticket.
They need to know it's not technology. Didn't you say that in our first episode? That data is really anthropology?
I did. And that is a key perspective to bring to the table when you're going to dive into AI or analytics. I think we've learned that we emphasize the wrong stuff. So let's get to the right stuff. This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. So today we talk about data is anthropology. Seems like a stretch. You'll be explaining this, right?
Of course. And our guest today is someone who spends a lot of time in this area, a real specialist on corporate use of data. This person has seen every nook and cranny across lots and lots of organizations.
Awesome. Carry on, Professor.
We have all heard the definition of insanity, doing the same thing again and again and expecting a different result. Let's apply that to data. Maybe your CEO is home from CEO camp, needs some sort of analysis, or let's do AI. So, you know, companies are jumping on AI like it's the last loaf of bread in Georgia and there's an inch of snow forecast. The generic approach is, well, we'll do some sort of strategy, we'll do an architecture, we build some technology. Along the way, we have some problems, some delays, we learn that our data is not up to the task. Every once in a while, we're successful, but most of the time, things fail. Well, there's our definition of insanity. We keep doing it. Well, what needs to change? Isn't this how you do techie stuff? Well, it is, but we're not doing techie stuff. That's the problem. This stuff is way different. We're kind of more in the realm of a transformational effort here. Our world is transformed from labor-intensive work to land and farming to the Industrial Revolution and capital, and now we're in this age of data, and that is transformational. Like doing Lean or Six Sigma, companies start as a transformational approach. Well, and that's a lot like losing weight. The doctor says, John, diet and exercise. I ask the doctor, which one? Diet and exercise is required both, right? You can't do one or the other. You have to transform. And it's the same thing with our approach to data. We need a fresh perspective. We need to do things differently. It's about transforming things. Because of data, we need to learn some different things. Society's different now. We're in a different age. The world is different. Data is an incredibly intricate part of our lives. How can you say all those things and not think we have to act differently? So take a fresh view. Understand it's transformational. It's going to happen. And it's okay. Oh, also, be nice to each other. Our guest today is Malcolm Hawk, a recognizedly, sounds like a Marvel hero, the Marvel Hawk anyway, the Malcolm Hawk. Anyway, he's a thought leader advisor in the field of master data management and data governance, and he's worked with the world's largest organizations on strategies. And I've talked to this guy a few times, and he's practical and actionable and pretty cool. And I know he was at Gartner Group for a while. Welcome to the podcast, Malcolm. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, John. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Now, you were at Gartner Group, but where are you now?
I work for Prophecy. We are a vendor of MDM, Master Data Management Software.
Oh, okay. All right. So right now, just off
the top of our heads, what are you talking about the most in your data work? What's the most common conversation you're having?
Oh, gosh. Probably the most common conversation these days is AI enablement.
Uh-huh.
Building AI ready data, whatever that means. We can have a conversation about that, but that seems to be top of mind for most. AI is a priority for most of the companies that we're talking to. People are trying to figure out how to leverage things like MDM and other foundational aspects of data management for the enablement of AI. So people kind of get that they got to get their foundational house in order, but at the same time, they also have a mandate to get going on AI. Like, now we need to check the box quickly, and we don't have a lot of time to spend talking about lofty conceptual foundational things when our board is expecting action. So it's really finding that balance between those two worlds that seems to be front of mind for a lot of data leaders these days.
Yeah. Okay. Old fear of missing out thing is just
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So the theme of today's podcast is about data as sort of an anthropological thing, because it's so important to society and organizations. It's more than just, well, what's the ROI on that kind of thing? So when I say something like that, what comes to mind? What do you think about that comment, that data is kind of anthropological?
Well, it is, because it's a model of us and the things that we build and the processes that we execute. So I think data most certainly is. It's a reflection of everything that we do. So we have an anthology. We have a history. We have social constructs. We have all of those things. So when I hear you say that, it says, okay, that makes sense. But to a certain degree, it does have a little bit of a life of its own, I would argue, as well. And things have kind of evolved very interestingly over time. I read a book once. The author's name is Christopher Higgins. He is a professor of statistics at NYU. He's also the chief data officer, or not chief data officer, he's the chief data scientist for the New York Times. And he wrote a really interesting book called, I want to say, The History of Data. And if you listen, Christopher, forgive me if I got your title wrong, but what he talked about is how kind of data is evolved over the years, and some of the evolutionary forces that have impacted how we look at data today and how we treat data today. So, yeah, I think what you just described makes sense. I love philosophical discussions.
Yeah. Well, now, are we ready for a philosophical discussions are kind of heavy, but big changes in society usually start from big ideas historically. Are we ready for this type of stuff, human beings, organizations?
We need to be. I mean, if we're not, we need to be, because we live in a competitive environment, right? I mean, we're seeing this with AI right now. There's kind of a, for lack of a better phrase, a kind of an arms battle going on, and everybody's racing towards some unknown future, and we're all racing there, and we're all going there. Getting back to my previous point, I don't think many people are sitting back and asking bigger questions about, should we even be doing that? I think we probably should be asking some of those questions. Case in point, what is broadly known as AGI, generalized intelligence, when the machines come smarter than us, do we really want to go there? Is that a good thing? It just seems like we're racing endlessly towards that end. So to your question, are we ready for the conversation? I don't know. Do we need to be? Yeah.
Okay. So if you're, you know, Henrietta CEO, and you're surrounded by all this FOMO stuff and these basically essential anthropological or societal type things whirling around you, what should you do? What's the right practical thing to do? And let's exclude the vendor hype and the, oh, you must do this. And
yeah,
I mean, because you and I can both agree, because I've been in the analyst side, as you did with Gartner. There's a whole bunch of terrific BS you can get surrounded by.
Yeah.
And the money chasing this is just scary amounts of money. So what should a well-reasoned, balanced-headed leader do?
I I honestly don't know, which is not really the answer that you want to get from a podcast guest. I honestly don't know.
No, it's not a bad answer at all. I mean, well, I think it's very spot on.
I mean, well, let's just look at the environment in which most CEOs are organized. I mean, they're working for publicly held or privately held. It doesn't matter. But your mission is to extract the most shareholder value possible. Right. Now, we can have conversations about responsible and ethical ways of doing that, but those are long games, right? Yeah. When you're talking about, you know, environmental impacts or social impacts, those things are important. We're having those discussions, but I would argue those are very, very long games, right? The benefits of what we do today from an environmental perspective or a social perspective, I think won't bear fruit for multiple quarters out. And if you are a CEO who is tasked to maximize shareholder value, it is a very, very difficult balance to strike to do both at the same time, particularly if your tenure is 3 to 4 years and what you're working on probably won't bear fruit for 5+.
Yeah.
From the perspective of some of those kind of loftier issues that we could be talking about. So It is a difficult balance. I am seeing more private companies have a little more success here because they can take a longer horizon on these things. The private companies, the larger ones that I've worked with over time, tend to be heavily influenced by founders, tend to be heavily influenced by families, and tend to have different guiding principles that give them the freedom to maybe do some of these things that take a long time to do. But if I'm a CEO of a publicly traded company, finding that balance, boy, that is awfully hard.
If you put that in the context of all the changes going on and the fact that we have to struggle with ethical issues that society's actually never struggled with before, it's a tough job. It's a tough job. I think it means that, you know, you have to actually, when you wake up in the morning, you just don't dive on what the consultants are saying, because Lord knows, there's a lot of self-declared expertise out there right now. That's also scary. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it certainly is.
Okay. So we ask everybody on this pod two questions. The first question is, who is a non-technology leader that you admire? You don't even have to name names. Like if it's your boss, and then why? Why has that non-technology person influenced or helped you in your work?
Boy, I won't name any names, but okay. The first person that comes to mind is somebody that helped guide my career very, very early on. He was a manager at a restaurant that I was a waiter in.
Okay.
and it may not sound like, wow, that's unbelievable. Like, you know, kind of like Nelson Mandela type inspiration. But I learned so much from this person in terms of how to manage people as a leader, how to motivate people as a leader, how to extract the most from people, but also how to guide your own behaviors day in and day out as an employee. What I learned from this person is that you're managing and running your own business. Even if you're just an employee doing a task, you are in... Yeah, you are managing your own business. So those lessons about kind of servant leadership, the lessons about being humble, the lessons about being maniacally focused on customer happiness and customer we call success, those things just stuck with me. And I think back to those early days often in the choices that I have to make day in and day out as a leader and as a thought leader in our space.
That's really cool. And you know, and around the realm of data, there's people just think, well, data is just part of a job and it's like the light switch or the whiteboard. It's just part of the tools. And then there's people that take the attitude you just expressed that someone's going to consume this data. Someone's going to use it. It is something that is actually bigger than just, and it's different than just say a sharp pencil or a fresh pad of paper in terms of a tool. And then applies that exact sort of thinking. That's really cool. That's a great answer. Last one here. If you could get one thing, just one concept understood and implemented in an organization, all right, on a data topic now, you could go in there and you have Harry Potter-esque powers and you go, poof. All right. What's that one thing you would get understood and implemented if you had the power to do that?
Boy, there's so many, John. My list here is incredibly long. I think the one thing that I would try to instill is that data quality errors happen, right? We mistype things. There are data capture errors. These things are normal. But the one thing that I would tell people is that data is structured and captured in a way within business applications by design, and that there are difficult trade-offs that have to be made day in and day out by software engineering leaders and CTOs, the trade-offs between speed and quality when it comes to modeling business processes through software applications. And those decisions are made consciously, and they're made every day, and they're not made in the spirit of making your job, the data person, harder. They're made in the spirit of optimizing a business process, given a complex set of trade-offs that have to be made day in and day out. So as a data professional, you may see data that has different structure, different quality standards, or different definitions. And often, not always, but often, that data is landing on your transom, and it's there, and it's there by design, and it was made that way. It wasn't made with low quality in mind. It wasn't made with a negative intent. It wasn't made to make your job harder. It was made to optimize a business process. And that process, how it is optimized, may not fully align to what you need to optimize your analytics.
Gotcha.
And those things may be opposed to each other, but it's your job. It's your job to find a way to express that data in analytics the best way that you can. And frankly, that's job security. And another way to say this in a pithy kind of one-liner is that data quality is an opportunity, not a burden.
Oh, I like that. Well, that's a great way to end. Thank you very much, Malcolm. And thanks for answering the questions. And we're going to talk to you here in a few minutes on our famous game show. But thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. And also, as always, thanks to our sponsor, the specialists at Hubris Data Pros. If you're leading an organization and don't know how to get more from your data, start with Hubris.
Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. Let's talk about data culture. Peter Drucker famously said that culture eats strategy for breakfast. Well, he didn't actually say that, but he did say something close, and the point is that a misaligned culture will undermine your strategy. You can find lots of definitions for data culture, but they all basically come down to a set of behaviors and beliefs embedded into the fabric of the company, into its operations and its identity. It's not strategy, and it's certainly not technology. Now, technology can be used to enhance and empower a culture, but it's not the starting point for creating one. Guess you could say that culture eats technology for breakfast too. Companies with mature data cultures have a deep understanding of their data, of its meaning, its content, and semantics. They understand that applications exist to serve the data, not the other way around. Data culture always appears as a top CDO priority, but it seems we've made a priority out of wanting a data culture, not creating one. That takes intention and discipline, and it starts at the top with management leading by example. So, if you're a leader, ask yourself, what is your company's data culture? Do you have one? Is it intentional or is it accidental? And does it inform prioritization, or is it just words on employee town hall slides and marketing emails? If you find that your data culture is a little weak or a little fictional, between now and next time, the one thing you can do is to be aware. Notice whether your enterprise is application-oriented or data-oriented, and whether information management drives development or is just an afterthought. This may lead you to start thinking about what you want your company's data culture to actually be. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Malcolm, welcome back to our audio Rorschach. I'm having a hard time saying that today. Audio Rorschach test, kind of a little fun thing we like to have here. I'm going to play a brief snippet of music that is copyright free because we're cheap and have no budget. And you're going to respond with a data-related anecdote, whatever is conjured up by this music, the first thing that pops into your head. Are you ready, sir?
Yep.
All righty, here we go. First reaction.
Data pipeline failure.
Pipeline failure. Data all over the floor. Spilling everywhere.
Exactly. Exactly. That's it was very dramatic.
Yeah. You know, that's really cool. You know, data, Doug Laney said this. That's the first time I heard it, when he was talking about data's not really the new oil. You know, that farce. By the way, people listening, if your vendors are saying data's the new oil, they're full of beans. Okay. Actually, it's more than beans. Kind of beans downstream is what they're full of, but we'll go about that later. But
downstream beans.
So anyway, but Doug Laney, who's going to be a guest here later on this year, said, unlike the thing about if data is oil and you have a spill, you can clean it up. He said, but if you have a data spill, you can't clean it up. Once it's in the wild, it's in the wild. It cannot be got. That's something. And that reminded me of that. I mean, that's the data spill. That's a perfect thing there. Thank you so much again. You've been a great guest, and have yourself a great day, Malcolm.
Thank you so much, Sean. It's been my pleasure.
All righty.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Our theme today on the Rock Bottom Data Feed was Data as Anthropology, about the need to take a transformational approach and to create an intentional data culture. Thanks especially to our guest, Malcolm Hawk. I particularly appreciated his comments about the importance of finding the balance between the rush to deliver new cutting-edge applications immediately and getting our data house in order so that we can support those new cutting-edge applications. And then also that the corporate data analysts have to spend so much time wrangling into shape was probably designed to optimize business processes rather than align to facilitate analytics. After all, as he said, data quality is an opportunity, not a burden. And finally, thanks once again to our sponsor, Hubris Consulting. Demanding that application data align directly to analytics requires hubris. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening. And remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, Data is Anthropology, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counterthreaded production, copyright 2024, all rights reserved.